A big mistake I think people make when trying to get organized is buying a bunch of organizational like containers in advance. People do this all the time. They go to the store and they're like, oh my God, look at these cute bins. And they buy the bins and they're like, it's going to fix things. But if you don't know what you're going to put in the bins, all of a sudden the bins are just more clutter.
The New Mamas Podcast. This podcast was created to help first-time moms everywhere navigate this new stage of life and to talk about the honest and the raw moments in motherhood. I'm your host, Lena Forrestal. I'm a working mom by day and a blogger and photographer by mid-afternoon. And as a first-time mom myself, I'm on this journey with you. So, New Mamas, let's do it. Let's kick off the episode and get to the good stuff. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm excited to be chatting with someone that I've been stalking on Instagram. I mean, following on Instagram for a while now. Jacqueline King, Instagram handle, sort of space. And I like every time she has a story up, I'm like one of those. I like try to click it like right away. Like I'm like obsessed with your stuff, number one. So I hope I don't come off as too much of a psycho. But Sort of Space is a professional organizer who I found through my New Jersey blogger friend, Brianna. And she's at That's Brianna B. But see, everyone, this is social media at work. Today, we're going to be talking about how to stay organized as a new mom, which is beneficial for me because I feel like although I'm really put together in my professional life, my physical slash personal life can be a hot, hot mess. And I don't understand, like, why is it that I'm so organized at work, but then like everything else falls apart? Anyway, that's what I'm looking to uncover with Jacqueline today. Jacqueline, thank you for joining me today. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yay. Thanks, Lena. I'm so excited to be talking to you today. This is great. Yeah. So I'm a professional organizer. I just recently moved out of the New York City, New Jersey area after 16 years. I went to college in New York. I've been there for a very long time. And now I'm temporarily living with my mom in Connecticut while we look for a home. So that's a big new life event. I started an organizing company maybe 3 years ago now after a pretty long career in New York as a nanny and household manager. So I worked in private homes for about a decade, helping raise people's children and also keeping their lives in order and keeping their lives on track. And a lot of that is spatial. So when it came time to pivot into a new genre, it just seemed like the natural fit. And I've been loving it. And then COVID hit. And that kind of sidelined things a little bit.
God.
I know, everyone, like the pivot, you know? But that is what really kind of pushed me into Instagram more, which has been actually a wonderful, you know, different area to explore with my business and also just with relationships and meeting people. That's how I met you. And it's been great. So I'm really leaning into my new mom life as well as an organizer and just as a woman and a mom and a wife and all that good stuff.
I love that. And when you said that you were a professional organizer, or house manager and nanny, I bet you were a dream come true for your clients. Like if I could afford to hire someone like that, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yes. I'm very
although
lucky.
I mean, with the price, honestly, with the price of daycare.
Oh yeah. No, I'm just very lucky that I had wonderful families that I work for. I have great relationships with them still. And yeah, each family's needs were a little bit different. And as I got further along in that career, it was sort of a more all-encompassing role. And so my last family that I worked with, I had a variety of responsibilities, not just childcare. And I managed some other staff members and, you know, coordinating schedules and managing, you know, like travel and just different things for different components of their lives. And that requires a lot of forethought and logistical management and organization. So if you have different people coming in and out of the same home, not, you know, like, you don't have to have a full staff for that to be complicated. It could just be you and your partner. Making sure that everybody knows where such and such goes and having a system that works, it just makes everything simpler and smoother, because then you're not like, I don't know where the keys are. I don't know where my sunglasses are. Where's my mask? Did you move that paper? Like, it's just, and there's always going to be a little bit of that. But if you have some basic structure in place, it really alleviates a lot of that. And I am not perfect. I lose my keys. And so that's why I have to have a place that my keys belong. It is essential for my life to know that I put the keys on the hook, because if I don't have that, I might not be able to find them. And then I get really frustrated with myself and I beat myself up about it. And so it's better for me to have those sort of systems put into place in advance to sort of like preempt my problem.
Ooh, so it's all about systems and process, right? Yeah, and when you just said, yes, where are my keys, I got triggered a little bit, because that's like a daily occurrence for me where I'm like trying to like juggle everything, going for daycare, getting Archie out for daycare, and then I bring all the stuff out to the car, I pull on the car door, locked, can't sense the key, and it's the worst. But so, Jacqueline, our babies are roughly the same age. So you became a first-time mom too during the pandemic. Do you want to share a little bit about your birth story and your motherhood journey?
Yeah, our babies are only a few weeks apart, so we probably had very similar experiences in the timeline region. I actually went through fertility treatments to get pregnant. So my daughter is an IVF baby, and that's a whole nother story and process. And, you know, no one expects to join the infertility tribe, but it's a pretty big network of people. And there is a lot of support to be had there, which I'm really appreciative of. It was a really difficult experience for me. I'm a very open person. I like to share. I like to talk about my life experiences. And while I was going through that, I went so in. I've turned inward in a way that I never really had before. It's just hard to know what side of that statistic you're going to end up on, because you don't know. And that's a really difficult place to be. And I am extremely lucky that I had amazing care and wonderful doctors and a kick-ass therapist and an amazing partner who helped me through it. And we ended up with an incredible little girl, Kennedy. She was born on May 18th, right in the middle of the pandemic in Jersey City, which was pretty overwhelming. You know, pregnancy hormones will do enough to you as it is, and then throw a really scary disease into the mix that is running rampant in the city. And you know, being in the city, you could hear the sirens constantly. You could hear the 7 p.m. cheer for the healthcare workers. And, you know, being outdoors still felt precarious. It felt scary because we didn't know much at that point still. There was a couple of weeks where I was not sure if I was going to be able to have my husband with me while I was delivering. And that was really scary. That was a really, really scary thing to confront. I had pretty rough anxiety during my pregnancy.
I remember that.
Yeah. I had pretty rough anxiety anyway. Going through fertility treatments, my ability to think that the worst case scenario wasn't going to happen was difficult. I had to sort of coach myself into thinking and believing that the most likely thing to happen is that everything was going to be okay. And it was, but that was a really, I had to sort of beat that mantra into my brain. And so when, you know, I got induced. She was full term, not looking to come out. So, but because I was IVF, my doctors didn't want me to go too long. I'm technically a high-risk pregnancy because of fertility treatments. So I was induced. And to be completely honest, a lot of that's a blur now. Your brain does some amazing stuff for you post-labor.
Girl, yes, it does. Because I was looking, someone posted a picture of their newborn the other day, and I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Maybe I could do that again soon.
I've said a couple of times, like, oh, it wasn't that bad. And my husband looks at me and he's like, were we yes. in the same place? It's like, I don't know what is happening postpartum, but like there's some glossy situation happening because that's not what I saw. That's not what I was observing for you.
Yes. Because I spent the first 6 weeks sobbing and I look back and I'm like, aw, that was great. Like, wait, so you were induced. I was also induced. Did it take, did your labor take a long time?
Yes, I was in labor for 24 hours.
Oh, the worst. Did you have a moment there where you were like so frustrated with how slow things were going?
Yeah, I finally got the epidural after a couple of hours. I labored without it for a little while, which was really painful because I had the catheter balloon. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh yeah, oh you did.
It's not, I'll tell you what.
Oh wait, did you have the catheter balloon before? You got the epidural?
No, yes, before the epidural. So there was a one med to speed things along, then the catheter balloon, and I labored with that for a couple hours because I didn't want to slow down my progress. And the nurses kept saying, like, after 15 minutes, it'll feel okay. It's like, that's bullshit. This does not feel okay. And so then I finally got the epidural and I was able to sleep for a little bit. But by the time I woke up in the morning, I hadn't progressed enough. So I was also thinking like, oh God, am I going to end up in a C-section? And I was definitely not the person who had a birth plan. That is like, for me, I also think with infertility, I was just like, get me a healthy and baby safely and keep me healthy and safe and whatever delivery method is necessary, like we will do that. But I also wanted to avoid a C-section if at all possible because of fertility issues. I don't want any uterine scarring if I didn't have to endure that. So, you know, there were the two sides of the brain going. But so we finally kicked things into gear and she was born 1:42 p.m. or something. So the next day, pushed for an hour and 45, I think.
Damn, girl.
Yeah.
Oh my God, kudos. That's Thanks. Hard when you get to that stage. I feel like that was
rough.
Even with the epidural, I thought.
Well,
it was,
by then, yeah, I actually. So I started. I got really bad shakes right before it was time to start pushing, and my doctor was like, "Just adrenaline. Like you're okay. Your body's just kind of, you know, getting ready." But I didn't like top off my epidural because of that, because I was feeling a little bit overwhelmed. And so by the time I was really pushing her out, there was a whole lot of sensation. So I felt I couldn't really feel my abdomen. So like the contractions weren't super intense. I could feel the pressure, but like the exit was felt. The exit was felt. I was not like a dream boat giving birth. Let's just say.
Yeah. Or like one of my friends said she couldn't feel anything. Like she was
my sister.
And I felt, I don't know, maybe I got the epidural so early that maybe I didn't have, everyone talks about the top off. I didn't have that.
Oh, you didn't have that?
No, I feel nice. Like it started to wear off. Like, at least that's how I felt. Cause I could feel like I could really feel.
Yeah. I was like, oh, they call that the ring of fire for a reason.
Oh, there's no feeling like it.
So I think we were talking about giving birth during the pandemic, but we got out of that hospital as quickly as possible. Yeah. It was just like within 24 hours of her being born, I wanted out.
And were you able to leave like that soon?
Yes.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we were able to be discharged pretty quickly. Didn't have an amazing experience with the lactation consultants. Mm. It was a little bit of a rough go. Didn't have a great start with breastfeeding. We did formula in the beginning and I worked on pumping and worked on getting a better breastfeeding relationship going. It took a long time. It was really hard. I fully, fully understand in retrospect why people aren't able to breastfeed, because it took me at least until 6 to 8 weeks to even like get the hang of it. And that's often when women are going back to work. So how the hell are you supposed to have a breastfeeding journey that lasts longer than that, which is when it starts to feel a little more manageable, if not actually easy.
Right.
So I feel really grateful that I was able to do that, but I definitely wouldn't have if I wasn't just home with her. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you learn all these things. And then also I get real up in arms about paternity leave. My husband, we were so lucky. He had a really generous paternity leave. And why is this not federal? Like, why is this not a law?
Preach.
The idea that women don't need support is just absolutely insane. Like, it's just, you know, like, it's not just about the baby. It's also about the person who gave birth. Like, you are physically recovering. I was still wincing when I stood up after 7 weeks after, you know, like, there was a lot of pain involved in that recovery. And you're also trying to figure out how to keep this little human alive. And your hormones are going insane. Yes. You're crying all the time. And then you're mad. And it's like, did you take a nap? You took a nap, like, at your husband. You know, it's just like.
Yes. Yeah.
You feel like a crazy person. I still feel like a crazy person sometimes.
You're right. You're right. Paternity leave should be mandatory. 100%. I do not know why. We're so behind. So behind on all that.
Let's get maternity leave on the list first, too, because that's outrageous. It's just.
Yeah.
That's a soapbox I like to climb up on sometimes. I got a lot of thoughts and feelings.
I do, too. Yeah, I know. And then everyone's like, but you got FMLA. So. You're good. And I'm like, guys, FMLA is unpaid. Not every family can afford 12 weeks not working. And it only qualifies if you've been with your employer for 1 year. I think the nitty gritties shift with each state, but it's still overall, I think, unacceptable that's what it is.
100% agree.
Crazy. Yeah. We should climb on that soapbox sometime together.
Totally. All about it.
Like that. So no one can prepare you for the absolute chaos that happens when you bring a newborn home. When I was pregnant, I remember agonizing over how to fold baby clothes and organizing them by color, right? Oh, all these pretty neutrals, gray, beige, right? Like light blues, dark blues. But when Archie came home, those clothes never saw the inside of a drawer again. I was pulling clean clothes out of a laundry basket for the next a lot of months. I think only recently that I like actually fold and put things into drawers, but it's still a little bit haphazard. So what tools or strategies would you recommend for a new mom in staying organized during the newborn stage?
Yes. So I think the first tool and strategy is give yourself some grace, because it's not going to be perfect, and that's totally okay. We all have, you know, like, I love a Pinterest perfect drawer. I love a color-coded onesie section. But the idea that that's how you're going to be putting away your clothes every time you do laundry when you have a newborn at home it's asinine. That's just not realistic. It will not happen. And that's okay. I think something you can do is put some simple systems in place for yourself in advance. I really think that drawer dividers help. They just give yourself sections. Sections. Ooh. You don't need to be too particular about this is the color coding and this. Like, give yourself some sections. So it's like, these are the onesies. These are the burp cloths. And if you're just chucking at that point, it's okay. But then you know what you're grabbing. So it's just, that's like, keep it simple.
Where to chuck.
Yes, where to chuck. And sometimes that's all you have time for. And that's okay. That's totally fine. Yeah, I think keeping your laundry separate just by person. So even like your husband's stuff versus your stuff versus your baby stuff, that really helps too, because then you're not worried about separating things out. And if you do have to just chuck things into a laundry basket, it's like, this is the baby's laundry basket. This is my laundry basket. And this is my husband's laundry basket, or my spouse's laundry basket, or my partner's laundry basket, or my other kid's laundry basket. Laundry is a mountain that is never, you're never done climbing. It's just... That was something I wasn't prepared for.
Preach,
like,
girl.
You know, and I was a nanny, and like, the newborn phase of laundry is just unreal. It is a Herculean task, and it is never
savage.
Complete. It's just intense. The other thing that one thing that saved me a couple of times, and I still do this now, is make yourself, if you have a car, make yourself a car kit. So get a little Tupperware box and fill it with like a bunch of diapers, put some wipes in there, you know, what, like creams, a toy, some onesies, whatever, like, you know, whatever you need on hand at the moment, a pacifier if you use it, all of those things. Put it in the car. Don't think about it. You will use it. I had a blowout one time when we were traveling, couldn't find the wipes, used the car kit, perfect, fixed it all up. And then it's like, even if you haven't updated it in a little while, like you can like MacGyver yourself a solution out of the materials inside of this kit. So it's like, okay, is the diaper a little too small? That's fine. Like we'll just use the leggings to hold it up a little bit. You know what I mean? Like you can figure something out. Like do favors for yourself in advance. Anticipate that there's going to be problems and you will be better for it. That's definitely one of my top tips. Just like have some stuff stacked.
Those are huge.
Yeah. It's like the motherhood equivalent of like stashing $20 in your jeans when you put them away for the winter and then like you get them back out and you're like, oh, a surprise. Like I did this nice thing for myself. Do that for yourself with like necessities for parenting.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I can already think of a couple scenarios where that would have come in handy. Like there was one instance where my parents were visiting and we were going out to dinner together. Now, I usually have all this kit that you talk about in the stroller. Not great if you forget the stroller. So we went out to eat. We drove 20 minutes away. We get to the location. No stroller. So that means no diapers. No formula. There was like nothing. So I was there with this baby who was 3 months old and nothing on me. It was not a good look.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. So yeah, you put those little kits in any in both parents' cars. If you have two parents and you can put them, you keep one at your in-laws or like wherever you, if you bring your kid over to somebody's house regularly, put one there. Just put your stuff in places where you may have problems in the future, and then it will be there to help you.
I love that. Another good tip that I learned was having little stations around your house. So sometimes you might need multiples of things, even though you might think you might not want to. Like those little nose squeezers to get the boogers out.
Yep.
Don't just have one. That's like my biggest piece of advice is, I like that, like the Tupperware car kit almost have like these little kits. I had one like downstairs and upstairs and in the bathroom because those are the three places that I spent the most time with Archie. So it wasn't like you're downstairs and you're like, oh God, I need to suck these boogers out. You need to run upstairs, right? Especially if your partner isn't at home and it's just you. And that's something that I learned was really helpful with setting up these little stations.
Absolutely. And it's also, you can change that over time. Mm-hmm. Like we were in a one bedroom apartment for the first 7-8 months of my daughter's life. And now we're in just one room in my mom's house. So we've been room sharing for, you know, by design or circumstance since she was born. And in the beginning, in the early days, when she'd wake up in the middle of the night and need to eat and need a diaper change, I would take her, we'd take turns, but I would take her out of the bedroom so that my husband could sleep. And our changing station was in the bedroom. So I created another changing station out in the living room. Well, you know what? She outgrew that nighttime feeding. We didn't need it anymore. So we changed that station into a little toy bin. And so you just change things as they grow. To your point about having little stations around the house, same thing, I think, for like toys and gear and such. Like have little compound spaces, little hubs in your main zones. So you can have a little set of toys in the kitchen. If you spend a lot of time in the kitchen, go ahead, keep a toy bin in the kitchen. That's fine. You don't have to have all of your toys in the play area. You should keep some toys upstairs in your bedroom or wherever you spend some time so that they are there. And they can live there and they have a designated spot. So then at the end of the day, if you were playing in the kitchen or you were playing in the basement doing laundry or wherever, you don't feel like I gotta go clean up all that stuff now. Because when you leave the room, you can just chuck it in the bin. You can put it in the little toy bin that's in that room that makes sense in that room.
I love it. I feel like having places that you can chuck things are really helpful. So one of the things that I was obsessed with on your Instagram was you did a video about how you made a cute little nursery nook in your bedroom, because you mentioned that you lived in a one bedroom apartment. And guys, for everyone listening, I felt like this was super relatable, because although a lot of parents have a separate room as a nursery, such as like our case, like we have, I do have an extra bedroom that is Archie's nursery, but it ends up being that your baby spends most of their first year in your bedroom. Not for everybody, but I think for a lot of people, they're for their first baby, that's what happens. And he's probably not going to make his way out anytime soon. But for everyone listening, the space that Jacqueline created in her one bedroom was absolutely gorgeous. It was like a thing of dreams. And I'll link it in the show notes so everyone can take a look. But Jacqueline, do you want to talk to us a little bit about that process?
Yeah, sure. So I love creating space that's part of organizing. And I don't like fancy myself a designer, but I have a specific aesthetic that I like for myself. And if other people like it, that's great. And I knew that we were going to be in this one bedroom apartment for a while, and that we were going to just figure out how to make it work, and that we totally could. And people do it all over the place. People are in small spaces with babies. But I knew that in order for it to feel like a deliberate choice and not like we had to do this because we couldn't afford to move, or we couldn't, you know, expand if we wanted to, I wanted to create a space that felt really good to bring her home to. And so I just sort of started thinking about it. And we also didn't know the sex of the baby. We decided to be surprised at birth. So I picked what I thought was a pretty gender neutral theme. Yeah. I know it's not the most common thing. I never would have thought that I was going to do that. I never would have thought that I was going to do that, but
willpower
going through,
it's awesome.
Going through infertility, it takes so much of the like spontaneity and the surprise out of like getting pregnant. And so I was like, this is the one thing that I can control. I can control whether I know this information, and I want to be surprised. But so I picked what I thought was a relatively gender neutral theme, which is like night sky, and just kind of went with it and created a little sectioned off area. And I mounted curtains from the ceiling so that she could be enclosed and it would prevent her from seeing us all the time, which in the beginning we never closed, because in the beginning I was like, can you please be as close to me as possible? But when she got a little bit older, we were pushing her bassinet, into her little nursery nook, as I called it. You know, we could close the curtains and it would darken it so that it wouldn't be so light diffusing in from the windows. It would be a little bit darker and help her sleep a little bit more. And then eventually we decided to sleep train, and we ended up moving her into our walk-in closet. And so after we were going to bring her back into the bedroom after being in the closet, but it went so well. It was like, I think this is your room now. Then I transitioned the little nursery nook into our closet space, and I pulled all of our stuff out of the closet and reconfigured and sort of did a whole nother set of purging of things and rearranging of things, and found a way to put her crib into the closet and stay there full time. And so then I, you know, did another little removable wallpaper. Renters, removable wallpaper. Even if you're not renting, it's great. I love it. I use it everywhere now. Because now we're in my mom's house. We moved out.
What brand of removable wallpaper do you use?
So the one that I used for the first nursery nook, I found that it worked really well. And so I've been reusing that brand. It's called Roommates Decor. I tag them in all of my posts that have removable wallpaper, so you can see on there. But yeah, it's been really great. I haven't had any problems with like bubbling off or coming away from the wall. It's been really great. And they have really nice, cute little patterns and stuff. So definitely recommend. But yeah, so we did a nursery in the closet, and then we moved out of our one bedroom apartment, and now we're living in my mom's, and I went ahead and made another little nursery nook for her here because we're sharing a room again. So curtains up and a little bit of wallpaper. Our half of the room doesn't look, you know, as cute, but I wanted to make a space again that felt good to be in. If we're going to be here for a while, I want it to feel good. And I also want it to function well. So I put curtains up because, yeah, it looks really cute, but it also is functional for us. I close her in at the end of the night. And then when my husband and I come in to go to bed, we don't have to worry about the light coming on a little bit and disrupting her from her sleep. And it's also helpful that she can't see us 100% of the time. If she wakes up, she's not automatically looking for us. So that's been good too.
I love that. Now I'm going to think about putting up curtain in our bedroom too, because everything you mentioned was everything we go through every night when we go up for bed. Exactly. We have to like tiptoe, and then sometimes we want to turn on the TV, and when he wakes up at 5 a.m, he's like standing and looking at me. or now his favorite thing is like I have the bedside table right next to his crib, because again, we have a small house, small rooms. And now his favorite thing is knocking everything off that nightstand. So yeah, new things every day.
Cannie's pushing her arms through and trying to squat the curtain, so I'm slowly pulling her away from, like, there's enough space on all sides that she can't really get a handle on it, but like I'm pulling her away from the windows and closer to the curtains that,
oh God,
I would see, so that if she's grabbing at the ones, like I can see her doing it because it'll be on our side of the bedroom.
That's so funny. That's so cute. So as our babies get older, slowly and seemingly magically, we start to accumulate more stuff. Even if we're not the type of people to like too much stuff, like me, I don't like a lot of stuff. Like even my husband knows I don't buy things, but I buy things for Archie. Like all of a sudden I'm starting to buy, and then you start to get duplicates of things that you already have, like as gifts and stuff. So as our babies grow in and out of stuff, what do you recommend in staying organized?
The sad truth is that when it comes to kids, especially, there is always going to be maintenance involved. There's no magic bullet. It's not just going to be organized 100% of the time. Like there's just always maintenance involved. That's the truth with any organizational system, but particularly with kids, because they are growing so rapidly and the things that you require change very quickly. One of my top tips is to keep an outgrown bin very close to where you do clothes. So either if you can carve out a little space within a dresser or in a closet that's right near where all your baby's clothes are, just have a bin that's labeled outgrown. And then, because a lot of times you don't know that something doesn't fit until you're pulling it out and trying to put it on your kid because they grew overnight, because that literally happens. They grow overnight. That way you're not like, oh, I'll put it over here and then I'll put it in the bin that's in the basement. Like if you have too many steps involved, it's not going to happen. So if you have a bin that's right there, you just say, okay, it doesn't fit, and I put it right in. And then when it gets too full at, you know, every couple of months when you're doing a changeover of clothing because nothing fits anymore, then you can pull everything that's in that little bin out and put it in either storage if you're keeping it for the future, or you can go ahead and do a quick sort through and be like, I don't need any of this. I'm going to donate it. I'm going to give it to somebody else who needs it. I'll pass it on to a friend. When it comes to staying organized, I think for parents, particularly new parents, especially fewer steps, the fewer amount of steps involved and the lowest amount of mental energy that needs to be expended on making those decisions is best, because we're just constantly calculating things. Like our brains are just constantly making tiny calculations and decisions all day long about, oh, do I have enough time to, you know, eat lunch, or did I switch the laundry, or is he going to need a second nap today, or did she have enough protein, or like just whatever. Like all of these things they take up so much mental bandwidth. The idea of being organized sometimes feels like another thing that you just have to worry about, but really what it's supposed to do is eliminate a lot of those mental processes. Like if you don't have to think about it, you can just do it. It benefits the rest of your life. If you just know like, oh, this doesn't fit, I'm going to put it here because this is where I put the things that don't fit. You don't have to think about it. So that's another thing, like of doing favors for yourself, of like creating little systems that benefit you so that you don't have to worry about making all of those decisions or doing extra steps. Same with, you know, like the keys, same with our masks now. Okay, you know what? We come in the front door, like you need to create a drop zone. A drop zone is so important, I think, especially for growing children. With babies, there's a lot of, you know, carrying of the stroller and the diaper bag, but like you also need to make sure that you have your personal gear. So you need your wallet. Sometimes you pay for everything on your phone, whatever. You need your phone, you need your keys, you need your sunglasses, your cell phone, all of those things. And then you get into the house, and if you create a little drop zone right by your door or right wherever your natural stopping point is, you can have a little hook for your keys, or you can have a dish for where you put your sunglasses, and you can have a little basket where you keep your masks, and you can have a hook that you hang your diaper bag on, or you can keep your diaper bag under the stroller and you dock the stroller right next to this station. And that way you don't then lug everything into the center of the house and then not remember where anything is, because this ends up on the kitchen table and this ends up on the counter and this is in a chair and I threw my coat over here. And let's be honest, I am not perfect at these things. Like, I do this kind of stuff too, but I try to help myself by creating systems that are easier. So I, you know, in my apartment, I had a little clipboard that I could clip my mail to if I had outgoing mail, and I could clip little pictures or cards, and that had some hooks on it, and I'd keep sunglasses and our keys were on a hook and our masks were on another hook. And like, that was just, we came in, we came out, and that was like the little zone. And then you can have a spot for shoes or whatever, like making spaces that function for you. And that's totally going to be different for every person. There's no one size fits all prescription, which is also the benefit, I think, sometimes of working with a professional organizer, is they can help you sort of determine what the system is that would actually work for you, because it's not necessarily the system that works for somebody else. And if you saw it on Pinterest, that's great, but that doesn't mean that it's going to serve you any actual purpose if it doesn't work for you.
Yes.
A big mistake I think people make when trying to get organized is buying a bunch of organizational like containers in advance. People do this all the time. They go to the store and they're like, oh my God, look at these cute bins. And they buy the bins and they're like, it's going to fix things. But if you don't know what you're going to put in the bins, all of a sudden the bins are just more clutter. So you got to do the paring down first. Once you've pared down a little bit, you can sort of start to discern like, oh, okay, so I need a space to put the toys that are in the living room. I don't really have a spot for that. So I need a container for that. Well, then you'll think, you know, more deliberately about the type of container that you want. Do you want something that's going to fit under your coffee table? Do you want something that goes next to the couch? Like, do you want a lid on it? But you'll make decisions based on your needs instead of what you saw at Home Goods, which is really hard to pass up sometimes. But
yes. Yes, that is all me. Everything you mentioned, especially the Pinterest stuff. Like, I pin so much stuff on Pinterest, and sometimes when I go to recreate it at home, it just doesn't work. I think because, like you mentioned, there is no one size fits all.
Pinterest and Instagram too. Like, and even, yes, you know, my Instagram. Like, I like to post projects that I've done, and like everything is color coded and looks like amazing. You know, I love it when that turns out. But the truth is that for me, at least the clients that I work with, most of the time that's not what's happening. But what we're creating is a system that will function for your life. And hopefully it will also look nice in your space, and it will also like fit your design aesthetic, and it will make your home feel good to be in. But my primary goal isn't like creating a beautiful minimalist space that, you know, like nothing is ever on the countertops and it looks like nobody lives here. That to me doesn't, that's not realistic.
I know. This, can I tell you, that is my pet peeve on Instagram, is like all these like white, beige, minimalist. I just like, it's like, fine. I get it if that's your aesthetic. But right. I'm like, looks like literally like how do these people live? Like, is that real?
Well, I just don't understand. I'm like, how are all of the things you stand in front of the same color? Like, do you go to places with
I mean, maybe you do only buy things of a certain color, but like, yeah. What the, like, I buy this plant, like, it's red. Like, yeah. This pot is red. Like, okay, maybe I can repot it in something white, but you know what I mean? I totally get it. Like, mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm always, like, dumbfounded. Like, do they only buy, like, mauve, white, mm-hmm. beige, and, like,
and you know what?
Burnt to orange?
If that's your yes. thing, that's totally fine. Like, everybody has their own aesthetic and their own vibe. And some of those Instagram yes. feeds are really satisfying to look at. But for me and, like, my life and what I would put out there to show what I'm doing, it just doesn't make sense.
Yes. Yes. And to clarify for everyone listening, I'm not judging. I just feel like that's a very hard thing to pull off. As mm-hmm. a first-time mom, that's just like I feel like also it sets this unrealistic expectation, and I for a lot of moms on Instagram too, a lot of bloggers who, you know, they want to get into the blogging scene and they think that they need this like really white minimalist house to be popular or to get, you know, but sometimes it's nice to see what someone, you go and sometimes you have to buy for your child, like the activity centers. Was it you that was posting about the brightly colored activity centers yes. the other day?
Hideous bouncers. That's what I call them.
Yes. Yes. But it's exactly like, that's a little dose of like real life. Like it's hard yeah. to find something that's going to be like all white and beige and neutral.
She like, I have a hideous bouncer. It's awful. I inherited it from my sister who inherited it from her sister-in-law. It's like Finding Nemo. It is like hot blue and green and yellow and like not my vibe. Like none of this resonates with me, but she loves it. She goes nuts for it.
Yep.
I'm not going to deny my child that kind of joy. And also it's good for her development. So you know what? It's fine. Is it an eyesore? Yes, it's a phase. But you know what? Like, it's not always going to be perfect looking. And that's okay.
Yes. And you know what? It's a temporary, like you mentioned, it's temporary, right? Mm-hmm. We aren't going to have these like brightly colored, hideous things all over our house all the time. So
no, especially right now, because we're in the like not quite walkers phase. So we've got a lot of big, bulky gear. That stuff, you know, we've got the play tables and the bouncers and the big high chairs and the, like, we've got a lot, you and I have a lot of that stuff right now. So that can be really overwhelming.
Yes,
because
do.
You're just like, oh God, where do I put all this? And that's, you know, that is really tough. And I do think that another way to help yourself stay a little more organized is to not fall into the trap, especially when you're like creating your registry. Don't fall into the trap of, I need everything. I need Ooh. All of the things. Like you don't, you don't actually need all of the things. Get some suggestions from friends and family. Make sure that you talk to your people because everybody has a different experience. Every baby likes something different. And there will absolutely be one thing that you buy that you're like, I love this. It's going to be great that your kid's like, I don't care about that. I hate it. And then you're like, oh, like I have to get something else. Like, oh my God. So just don't fall into the trap of needing all of the things and know that there will be some things that you have to evaluate as time goes on. So I had, for instance, a Mamaroo swing. My friend lovingly gifted it to me. She just gave it to me. I was like, this is amazing. I had seen her use it with her babies and I knew that they loved it so much. Kennedy spent a collective 25 minutes in that thing. She was not into it. She wasn't into it. And it was just like, wow. Okay, like, oh, well, this doesn't work for us. Like, you know, and that was a bummer, but it happens. There's always going to be a thing that doesn't work for you. And it's not you. It happens to everybody. There's always something that's not going to work for your kid. All kids are different. And I know that, you know, parents who have multiple children will say like, oh yeah, this one loved to be bounced and this one couldn't stand it. So I had to get a different thing. I think if you're lucky enough to have friends and family who have children or who have items to pass on to you rather than buying new stuff, like that is a great way to test out if you think that it's going to be an appropriate piece of gear for you and your child, and just to, you know, extend the life of baby gear. I'm all about that reuse, repurpose lifestyle if you can. Like, I don't hate on buying new, but if you have the opportunity to borrow or reuse something, it also makes you feel less bad about maybe passing it on if it doesn't work for you. And a lot of people, when they're dealing with making decisions about getting rid of things, have that. It's the sentimental or an emotional connection to things, and also the financial connection to things. Like, oh, but I spent so much money on that. I don't want to give it away. I spent so much money, but it's already a sunk cost. And all it's doing is taking up space in your home and causing you more grief by looking at it every day, realizing I don't actually use this. This doesn't work for me. You know, give yourself some leeway in that by maybe buying secondhand or borrowing from friends. And that also just alleviates some of that pressure of letting things go when it doesn't work for you.
Yes. Yeah. And even in donating stuff does feel good too. Like if you are donating it or giving it away for free, it will always go to someone who needs it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that also feel like I just gave away a bassinet that was like, I don't know, $120, which isn't, you know, pocket change. So like it was expensive, but I didn't want to sell it because it had a stain in it that I couldn't get out. And I actually honestly like felt bad. I was like, I'm not going to charge someone for this, but yeah. I gave it away for free and it went to someone who really needed it. So
yeah,
felt good.
Before we moved, when I was purging, I put, you know, a bunch of clothes and a little bit of gear and things on Facebook Marketplace for free. And, you know, I did that a handful of times. And each time the person who came to get it was so grateful. And it's just, you know, I actually really like, I'll obviously as an organizer, I take a lot of stuff to Goodwill, but I really, really like when I can give things specifically. And so for a while I was working with First Step in New York, which is a program operated by the New York Coalition for the Homeless. And they help women re-enter the workforce. And it's a 15-week intensive training program. So they help re-educate and teach women how to get who are dealing with homelessness, getting back into working. And so I would go and help them organize all of the donations that they receive from people for their interviews and for their internships. And so we'd go in and they had like a little boutique that we would set up and itemize all the clothing and stuff. And it was a really great experience. And so when I was helping clients purge, letting them know like, hey, if you have business attire, like this is who I can give it to. And it feels better to know exactly who you're giving it to. So then when I was ready to purge and let go of some of my baby stuff, like it's emotional. Like there's an emotional attachment to those teensy mm-hmm. tiny leggings. Like it's okay. You know, like that was your baby who was in those leggings. They were so small in those leggings. Like I literally cry at those leggings. But knowing that I was handing it over to another woman who had a baby who was going to go into those leggings, it feels really good. And it makes that transition and that transaction much less burdensome. It feels like you're doing something positive for yourself and for somebody else, as opposed to maybe just arbitrarily getting rid of things.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a good like transfer of positive energy that happens too. Like I had a mom that gifted me a box full of clothing that her son from like age 0 to 12 that her son used. And I, every time I took an item of clothing and I put it on Archie, I just felt so grateful for that mom for giving me that clothes, because I was also so clueless. I just didn't even know what I was doing. So I didn't have any clothes, Jacqueline. I don't know what. I was so unprepared, but I was just really thankful. So I love that First Step in New York. That is,
yeah,
that's awesome. So Jacqueline, let's talk about toys since we're kind of on the topic of stuff. What are your tips for storing and organizing toys?
So I think one issue that everyone runs into is the amount of toys very quickly gets out of control. I really like to try and pare down as much as possible, a little bit like Montessori style, but not too intense. Fewer toys. Kids experience overwhelm of choice, just like adults do. So I often talk about how with my clients, if you're in a restaurant and you're looking at a menu that has like 5 pages and a bunch of different types of cuisine. And like, you just don't, you don't know, you're scanning and you're flipping and you don't know where to look. Your ability to make a decision is not very good. But if you're in a restaurant and there's a very curated menu, there's 5 things to choose from, you know exactly which one you're going to pick. And it's simple. Same thing happens when it comes to toys. If you have too many options, you don't choose any. You just, it's too much pressure. I really like to encourage toy rotation because it's also like not totally realistic that you're not going to be getting toys into your home. People gift you things. Your kids pick stuff up at a friend's house. Are you on a shopping trip and someone's having a temper tantrum and you absolutely need to buy that toy to make it stop? Yes, that happens sometimes. I was a nanny for a long time. I know. We haven't reached that stage with my own child yet, but like, I've been there. I understand. Implementing a toy rotation system can really be helpful. So what I would do is, first of all, when it comes to like a main toy area, especially when your kids get a little bit bigger, I really, really recommend cubbies. So cubby storage, really great. You can keep it labeled and separated. And especially as kids start to get a little bit older, they can help maintain that organization, but only if there's not too much because it's overwhelming. They need to be able to very easily make those associations and help with that cleaning up and staying organized process. But you keep another bin with your extra stuff, like in a closet nearby or in the basement or something. And every, you know, whatever works for you, every couple of weeks, every few months, when they're little, probably earlier or more frequent than not because they change so quickly, but you just switch it out. Oh, all these new toys. And you can do that a few times. And it's like they're getting new stuff over and over again. They're delighted and find new ways to explore those materials in a new way because it's new to them in a new phase of development. And it also helps you keep stuff at bay. So if you don't have every single thing out all of the time, you're not putting every single thing that you own back all of the time. So that's a big one. I think toy rotation really, really helps. It's, you know, if you can get it started, it's not hard to maintain. Like you keep your favorites out and then you switch. When kids get a little bit older, I think that having them help with the organizational process is really important. Giving very specific tasks when it comes to putting things away is helpful. It helps them understand exactly what's expected of them and also, you know, mitigates frustrations and potential temper tantrums. I'm speaking from experience of slightly older kids in the toddler 3 to 6 range. You know, say, okay, I need you to pick up the cards that are on the floor. Please just pick up the cards that are on the floor and put them in this basket. And that is a very specific task that a little kid can handle. They can do that. But if you just say, go clean up, they're not going to be able to do that. And so if you have designated places for things to go, you can be very specific with how you're asking them to help you maintain their spaces. So please put the crayons back in the crayon box, or please put the crayons back in the crayon sorter. Please put your dolls back in the doll basket. And you might have to do a couple of those rounds to get the space back in order. It might have to be like, let's start with these dolls and let's then do Legos. We need to put the Legos away. But if you have specific zones for each of those items to live, you can get them to help you. And then they'll start taking more ownership of their items. And then I also think at a certain stage, you want to involve them in the purging process, in the letting things go process. So my last nanny kids, who I was with, geez, almost for 7 years, they are my sweeties. They were boy-girl twins.
Aww.
I got them when they were just about 1 year old, and they're going to be, they're 8 and a half now. So when,
oh my goodness,
I know, and I missed them very much. Right before the pandemic hit, I would still see them like twice a week or something, I think. And so I was pregnant, and they were going to go through, we were making a plan to go through all of their books, and they wanted to separate out their books and the things that they're good at reading now, the stories that they still like to look at, and then the things that they can move on. And they would make piles, and they wanted to make a pile for my future baby and for their other babysitter's kids. They made piles to send books to. And yeah, and so I actually got a package a couple months ago, I guess now, but from them of clothes that the little girl had outgrown, but she's almost eight. So it's 7 year old stuff, but she was like, I picked these specifically for Kennedy. I think she'll like these. And it's, you know, it's instilled in her that if it's time to let go of something, but you can give it a new life or give it to somebody else who might need it and love it like you did, it doesn't feel bad to get rid of things. So I think that's a muscle you can start flexing when you're young too.
I love that. I love that, instilling those good habits early. And then you can always have them involved in the organization process as your family progresses. Mm-hmm. I love that. Here's a real-time issue for you.
Okay.
I have a small house with a lot of clutter. I feel like everywhere I turn, I just see piles. It wasn't always like this, but since Archie came home, this has been the reality I've been living in. Where should I start on my path to organizing?
The first thing I would say is try to identify, this is what I do on a phone call with a potential client, like try to identify what your biggest pain point is, or your biggest top three pain points. Like, what are the three things that are really negatively impacting your day to day? Is it, you know, the laundry pile up? Is it the clutter on the kitchen counter? What are those things? And so then we distill down from there what needs the most attention. The other thing I would say is when you're trying to get organized on your own, it can feel really overwhelming because you're looking at what seems like a monstrous task. It's like, I'll never see everything organized. It's never going to get there. And the idea that it's just like snap your fingers, one and done, it's a fallacy. Like, that's not how it works. You don't, you know, when you see like TV shows and, you know, people getting organized really quickly, you have a team of people coming in to help you, like a team. It's not just one or two people. It's a lot of people coming in to overhaul. They've already done all the measurements. They've already bought all of the product. They know exactly what's going where, and they're coming in and they're doing it really fast and it's turning over really quickly. That is not realistic for most people. That's just not how it works. So you're going to start small. Pick a drawer. Junk drawers are great for this because junk drawers usually accumulate a lot of junk, which can easily be thrown away. So go through your junk drawer first, pull it all out, empty it, wipe it down, throw out the stuff that you don't need, categorize the things that are in there like with like. So put all your pens with all your pens and all your stamps with all your stamps and the scissors over here and the tape over there. Get the things that belong with each other with their mates, and then put it back. It'll probably take you 15, maybe 20 minutes, and you'll feel like, oh, I did it. I did it. I did the thing. It's done. And it's just like a little something. It makes you feel like you're capable. And then you can move on to the next task, which is maybe a little bit bigger. The other part of it is that there's time involved. You have to know that there is time involved. So don't try not to bite off more than you can chew. You're not going to organize your entire kitchen in 35 minutes. That's not going to happen. Can you clear off your countertop? Absolutely. Try to take on tasks that meet the amount of time you know you have to dedicate to it. Do you only have 10 minutes at the end of the night? Okay, let's just sort through that mail pile real quick. You're good. That is something you can do in that 10 minutes. Don't try and squeeze all of the things that are on your to-do list in an amount of time that's just not realistic for getting them done, because then you're setting yourself up for failure. Then you're going to be annoyed with yourself for not getting organized like you said you were going to, but you weren't going to be able to do it in that amount of time anyway. It's going to happen over a period of time. And then staying organized is just like flexing. It's exercising. It's practicing and flexing that muscle. You do it over and over again, and it starts to feel easy. It becomes part of your routine. It's more repetitive. Oh, this doesn't fit. Put it in the outgrown bin. It's just a motion. You just start learning how to exercise that part of your brain that's, I've already done this. It's repetitive.
Ooh, hear that, everyone? Organizing and being organized is a muscle you flex. It's something you practice. I love that. So when you start working with a family, is that kind of what it looks like? You start with identifying pain points. Do you just want to talk a little bit about what the process looks like?
Yeah, for sure. So it's different now because of COVID. I've been primarily doing more virtual work, but something that has come from that is that I'm doing virtual consultations where I can just sit with you on a video call. We can talk for an hour. You can show me your space and we can go over just some simple, quick things that some homework that I can assign and some product recommendations and things, just the quick sort of diagnostic of what I think will help you quickest and most effectively right away. And that's just a consult, and that can be done pretty quickly. We can do a more in-depth plan as well for a do-it-yourself style virtually. And then when it's more safe to go back into homes more full-time, what I usually do is a consultation to talk through the pain points. We always have a phone call or a video call first to figure out what it is that you need. Because like I said before, everybody's situation is different. What will serve one person won't serve another. So we'll talk through what the issues are that need some support, and then we'll create a plan. And a lot of times that plan will be me coming in to that space, going through it with you. We will pull everything out of that space and categorize it. And then we will go through the hard part, which is the decision making. And that can be difficult or it can be really, really fast. And so I like to start with easy categories. So something that you already know that you want to sort of get rid of, let's do those first, because it's sort of, like I said, it's practicing, it's flexing that muscle. So it's decision-making about getting rid of something and where it's going to go. And if you can make those decisions with the easy stuff, it's practice for the harder stuff. So we'll go through, we'll do a good purge. We'll figure out exactly what needs to stay and live in the space. And then I will create a plan for what that space is going to look like. So if that means we need to get a new shelving system installed, or I'm going to, you know, design a new closet for you, or are we going to buy certain containers, or are we going to try to use what you have on hand? There's, you know, a multitude of ways that you can approach these. It doesn't have to be, I'm going to buy a perfectly situated, you know, situation from the Container Store and it's going to be all perfect. Like, I love that, but that's not everyone's budget. That's fine. You don't have to have a grand budget to get organized. That's also a myth. So we'll create the containment plan, and then I will come back. I will take everything that is getting discarded with me, and I will either take it to, you know, a donation site that we've discussed, a shelter, or we will create a plan for discarding those items. Those will leave your home with me so that you don't have to have it in there. That's also a place that people get hung up, is like they make the pile and then it sits in the corner and then they go back into the pile. If you already decided you didn't need it, don't go in that pile. Get that pile out of your house. So I'll take it away with me.
I have a pile. Yeah. I do that exact thing.
Get it out of the house, Lena. I'll come back with the materials at a future date, usually either a couple of days or maybe a week later, and set the space for you. And that's sort of like the exciting part, I think. It's sort of like making it pretty and making it labeled and putting everything where it belongs, and then taking you through a little tour of like, okay, so this is how we've got things set up. And, you know, making adjustments on the fly is part of what I really like about being in the space and helping people like in their homes to be able to figure it out while we're doing it, because it's, you know, sometimes the vision that I had isn't precisely perfect. And so I need to make some alterations to it. And then there's maintenance involved, but, you know, I'm there for that too. So I've gone and helped clients, you know, refresh spaces over time when kids are changing, like they're growing, they're changing sizes. We do a refresh of the closet, or you know what? The basement got a little bit overrun again. We want to create a new space in this section. Okay, I'll come and I can help you reconfigure. Because like we said, kids grow, change. That means that your systems may need to change along with the changes of your family. One thing is it's not stagnant. So your organization system is not going to be stagnant either.
Absolutely. And I can definitely see the benefit of having someone come in and objectively look at the space, because I think sometimes, especially if you share the space with a partner, you might both have different visions or ideas, or might be tied emotionally to certain things. And having someone come in objectively and evaluate the space can be so helpful. You're like a space therapist.
Yes.
I absolutely love that.
Right? You know, I thought about, my mother's a therapist, and I thought about going into therapy. I thought, you know, I took a grad school class for social work. I've thought about being a therapist before. So this is sort of a way for me to tap into that without having to get another degree.
Oh, well, 100%, because even like people getting rid of things can be so heavy and there's so much emotional labor involved. Like, for anyone who's listening, who's ever gone through like your closet, right? And trying to get rid of clothes, you're like, oh, I remember when I wore this when I was like a size zero going out to clubs. Like you feel like sentimental, but you're like, I'm never one going to do that or ever wear that again. So
yeah,
it's just, yeah, there is so, and then you're tired when you're done doing that. You're exhausted because it took so much emotional labor to get rid of it.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing more like personal besides our relationships than our stuff. Like it's a very big piece of who we are. So making decisions about it can take a lot of emotional bandwidth. And so, you know, it's like having a personal trainer for your stuff. Like you just sometimes need someone to coach you through that process to get to the finish line, to get through those difficult transitions and not get hung up on the hard parts to get to the other side. Because what I can do is come in and I can see the end result. And a lot of times people can't see their own end results in their spaces. They don't know what it's going to look like. They don't understand how it could be different than it is right now. And I can do that. I can see what it's going to be and how I can help you get it there, having an objective pair of eyes and just like a person to help you through it sometimes is really, really helpful.
Yeah, definitely. So how is the SOS, the Sort of Space method, different from other organizational methods?
I gotta be honest, like it's not like a wildly different methodology than some of the ones that you know. But what I do think is different is the way that I approach my work with clients. I like to meet people where they are. I am not trying to get you on my level. I'm not trying to make you live a different kind of life than you're living. I want to meet you where you are and get you to where it is that you want to go. And so getting your space under control in a way that helps and makes your life easier is totally my goal. I also want to have a relationship with the people that I work with. I like to, like, it's personal. It's a personal experience. And I think it's nice to get to know the person that's handling all your stuff. Like, so I want to be there and be a person that you feel comfortable with and that you can feel safe making some of those more vulnerable decisions or discussions with. And, you know, I'm not a minimalist and I'm not Marie Kondo. Like, I'm not like either of those. Like, I'm not like, if it doesn't spark joy, you don't have it. No shade. Like, it's a good metric for like making some baseline decisions. But, you know, like there are certain things that have utility that don't necessarily spark joy, like my snow boots, you know, like I need those. I'm not like, these are so joyful. You know what I mean? Like, but I also, you know, and I also don't think that everybody is going to have a super streamlined, pared down kitchen and minimalist vibe. And I'm not going to make you get rid of all of your stuff. That is also a fallacy. Like I'm here to help you make decisions about what to keep, not really about what to get rid of. Getting rid of things is a byproduct of that process. But what I want to do is help you discern what's important to keep in your home. And then I'll help you figure out how to appropriately maintain those things. So whether it's toys or it's your wedding china or it's bikes, all sorts of stuff, any of the stuff, all of your stuff. But I'm going to help you figure
all
out
the stuff,
what it is that you want to keep. And then we'll discard the stuff that doesn't feel as important anymore.
Yeah. What I like about your method is that it feels like it's non-judgmental, it's approachable, and it's realistic. And I feel like it's...
Ooh, I'm going to use those as my buzzwords.
Girl, I'm in marketing. I can help you.
Perfect.
I can help you out. No, but seriously, like that's, I think, why I was drawn to your Instagram and why I stalked it like a lot, because it just felt, you know, we talked about like the beige, white, minimalist homes and how those just don't feel realistic, right? As much as, okay, maybe I think that aesthetic is very cool and it'd be nice if it, maybe if it was my house, but it's just not approachable. I just really loved, I loved your page because it looked like a real family living real life. And also, you were an organizer that were was constantly like renegotiating your space. I thought that was super cool too, was that you weren't afraid to like modify. Like when you created the little nook for your daughter, like you just like, you made it happen. And I just feel like sometimes a lot of these organizational pages that I see feel very permanent. And I feel like that permanence can be really daunting and scary to people. So the fact that you're not afraid to test and learn. So I think that's a very cool thing about your method.
Thank you. Yes, 100%. An organizational system only works as long as it works, if that makes sense.
Like, yeah, but it's that's a simple, but that's exactly it.
And we aren't static beings. Like, so the needs that we have from our space and our home are not going to be static either. They're going to change, and we should feel like it's okay to need them to change and to tinker and rearrange and figure that out and maintain it.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Jacqueline, I could talk to you forever. And I think I see magical fairy Jordan, right? And the reason why we're calling him that, everyone, is because he helped us fix our audio issues just by standing over Jacqueline earlier.
Don't so let him think possesses- that he has that kind of power.
He has magical audio dust. But anyway, Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us today. If someone wants to connect with you, where can they stalk you / find you?
Well, I am at Sort of Space on Instagram. You can find my website, which is sortofspace.com. I'm on TikTok now. I'm at Sort of Space on TikTok. Yeah.
Wait, aren't you blowing up on TikTok? Yeah. Was that you? Yeah, that was right?
Yeah, I went viral today and I'm not totally sure.
Oh my God. Girl, milk that TikTok. Oh my gosh.
I know. Who knew? I didn't think, I mean, I'm a millennial, so I didn't know that TikTok was going to be my thing, but I guess it's my thing now. You can email me at hello@sortofspace.com.
Thank you. And for everyone listening, I will link everything we talked about in the show notes. So thank you all for listening and catch us next week for the next episode.
For joining us this week on the New Mamas Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. Have a friend that would like this podcast? Share the love. Stay in touch. Definitely give us a follow on Instagram at New Mamas Podcast. I'd also love to continue the conversation with you on my personal account, so let's be friends. Slide into my DMs at Lena Forrestal. Finally, be sure to check out my blog at lenaforrestal.com for all things motherhood, homesteading, and recipes that both you and baby will love. Thanks again, and stay tuned for next week's episode.